The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Advice and expertise on the relief you need from hay fever at All Care Community Pharmacies across Ireland.
And I have two more people now with beautiful speaking voices. It's time for our entertainment panel, and I'm joined by the editor of the Business Post magazine, Nadine O'Regan, and radio producer Owen Sweeney. You're very welcome, guys. So if we start with the cinema, maybe. Owen, Death Suicide Squad. I have a sense of deja vu here.
It's a bit like Rambo and it's a bit like the Fast and Furious franchise. The naming kind of conventions has contracted, I think. Okay. Suicide Squad was the one from 2016, I think it checks notes. This is The Suicide Squad. It is indeed a different film, technically a sequel. The first installment got critically mauled, and rightly so. This one's a slightly different proposition.
Critically mauled, but made a load of money.
And Margot Robbie then as Harley Quinn, she was rightly panned, I suppose, the director and the franchise, or the cinema was, or the production company were, for objectifying. She got a standalone kind of Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie last year, the year before. She's in this. Idris Elba's also in this, but more importantly, I think James Gunn is a safe pair of hands brought in to inject humour, pace, and I suppose a comic book sensibility. He of Guardians of the Galaxy fame. And it works. It largely works. I mean, like everything else, Brendan, it's too long. Do you know what I mean? It's 2 hours there or thereabouts. It all ends up with a big set piece. Technically, actually, two big set pieces. I'm not giving anything away. There's a giant starfish at the end of this film. And you know, when you see the monster in movies, you know, the great thing about Jaws was you never saw Jaws till the end. That is an absolute truism of most films, I think, where there is kind of a big bad who, you know, is more threatening when you don't see them. Yeah. When you do see them and it's a giant multicolored starfish destroying an unnamed Latin American city, it's a bit ridiculous. Okay. I'm not giving anything away. Anyway, great cast in this. It's a huge ensemble. As I said, Idris Elba's kind of blood sport. Look, the names don't matter. Viola Davis is brilliant as the kind of the nasty, compromised and government agent cutting in this Black Ops, which, you know, a squad, which is the titular Suicide Squad. Usually people locked up, psychopathic tendencies. Very special skills, if you like. John Cena is kind of the other alpha male. They play off each other. It's very good. Peter Capaldi goes a little bit Malcolm Tucker in this as the mad scientist who's running this kind of Nazi era facility of, you know, kind of scientific brain control experiments and all this in this unnamed or a fictional, I suppose, Latin American country, which at the start of the movie, where it goes through basically a dictatorship, a military coup with three different generals, and then a people's revolution at the end.
I can see
how long the film is.
2 hours, like there's a lot crammed in there.
So, okay. Geopolitics aside, it's a good bit of fun.
Okay, so
the emotional core,
people
you
will
might
know what they're getting. It's
a superhero movie. Yeah, it is what it is.
It's a good one.
It's enjoyable enough. Yeah.
Okay, Nadine, let's take something that sounds a little bit more discerning. So Zola, which is out in cinemas this week, this is based on a Twitter thread, yes?
Yeah, I don't know if discerning, maybe specialised.
Okay.
Now, it's pretty graphic, it's pretty hardcore, just to kind of warn some viewers. It's the story of Zola, who is a part-time stripper, who is persuaded to travel to Tampa in Florida by a pal that she makes at a restaurant, Jessica, who's played by Riley Keough. And the idea is the two of them will travel to Florida and make thousands over a weekend by working at a strip club there. And Zola is delighted by this prospect. But very quickly, once she gets into the van that will take them to their strip club destination, she begins to realize that everything is not as it seems, and that Jessica's boyfriend is really more like her pimp, and they're not actually going to strip. They're going potentially to be
so
sex workers.
It's gritty.
And actually, you know, if you like to say a film like, say, Spring Breakers, this would definitely be for you. It is all based on a real life Twitter thread that the real life person of this film, Isaiah King, began posting back in 2015, a very, very long Twitter thread where she described this incredible chain of events that started with her meeting this new friend and then ended with robbery, near death experiences, and was so remarkable a thread that it went viral, and then Rolling Stone magazine picked it up. David Kushner wrote this big article about it, and then it was subsequently decided that it should become a film. And what's actually amazing about Zola is that it really is one of the first examples of Twitter translating to the big screen. And the narrative and the story arc is so unpredictable. You're watching it going, I have no idea what's going to happen next. And that's kind of the joy of the film. So while some viewers may maybe put off by the fact that some of the scenes are very graphic, fundamentally, you are gripped to this film. It's out in cinemas actually on Friday, and it's well worth a watch.
Okay. Owen, something a little bit more family friendly, maybe. Tell us about Jungle Cruise.
Yes, this has got Disney written all over it, so much so that, much like Pirates of the Caribbean, it's based on a ride, a theme park ride in Disneyland itself. It's been there since, I think, the 1950s.
They'll base a film on anything.
They will.
Yeah, yeah.
So right. What they have to do, I suppose, they have the theme park ride and think, right, well, it worked at Pirates of the Caribbean, so we made up a load of stories based on that. That's Pirates in the Caribbean. We'll take it from there. So they've got this Jungle Cruise ride, so thinking, right, we have to make up a story here. Unfortunately, they probably made up a lot of plot. I'm not sure the story is, you know, it works. It's quite convoluted. It's definitely 12A, right? So that there are kind of bits of peril. There's some scary bits. There's some kind of CGI, very kind of like, do you remember the dead ghost sailors, zombie sailors, whatever they were in Pirates of the Caribbean? They looked like that. There's conquistadors. There's lots going on here, but the original inspiration, the ride itself, was somewhat problematic. It had kind of headhunters and, you know, the usual kind of stuff we don't talk about anymore, and rightly so. So what you have here is 1916. It's during World War One. You've got a brother and sister. Emily Blunt is the sister. She's full of derring do and a spirit of exploration. She's grown up. Their dad, who's passed on, raised them on these myths and legends. And one of them is the Tree of Life in the Amazon. The tree, when it blossoms, its petals have healing properties. She sees this as kind of the force for good. She believes in this legend. She wants the British Society to back her in her explorations, and she's got data to back it up. Of course, she's a woman, so they won't let her in or listen to her. Her brother, who's somewhat effete, is dedicated to his sister, goes along for the ride. She robs this. Are you following me already? She robs this arrowhead that somehow will direct her to the Tree of Life. She ends up in the Amazon, and there they meet a riverboat captain, where it turns into a little bit of the African Queen. Who's the riverboat captain but The Rock, who is fantastic.
So
if
The Rock
this,
is in it, it's going to do massive business.
It is going to do
The Rock
huge
is the best
business.
Businessman in the world, isn't he?
But what's really strange, the first half an hour of this film, when they're in Brazil and, you know, they're setting off and on the journey, it takes them so long to get out of the dock. He owes money because, of course, The Rock is down in his luck as this riverboat captain. Why is he there? We don't quite know. To Paul Giamatti. He owes money to him. He's a bit of a chancer. He runs river cruises by day, dispenses dad jokes. It's all very kind of heartwarming stuff. Then as soon as they're on the river, there's the youngest son of Kaiser Wilhelm, pay attention at the back, played by Jesse Plemons, is in a U-boat following them down in the river to find the Tree of Life, whereupon it turns into Tomb Raider at one point. It's got all the reference points. It is incredibly... I think it's too long, again, like most movies nowadays. It's
Did
definitely
you get a giant
12A.
Starfish in there?
No, there's no giant starfish in there. There are some scary conquistadores, though, and Don Aguirre, famously from Aguirre, The Wrath of God, is in there. There's a bit of a curse on these people, which brings you back to Pirates of the Caribbean. I'm not quite sure they explain it, but I think if you were there with a group of 12-year-olds, they'd probably knock any colours
crack out. And this is in cinemas, but it's also
Disney on Disney
Plus,
Plus
with
Premier
Access.
What does that mean?
So you pay more?
If you pay extra. Yeah, exactly. Okay. You pay extra to Disney
Plus. Yeah, I don't know
Plus.
If you noticed as well, but in the advertising for that film, they actually didn't have The Rock's name in the TV adverts. And I thought it was really interesting because they were foregrounding Disney in the same way that Marvel films tend to foreground Marvel. And it's an interesting move when you think about how actors, to some extent, have been downgraded now as studios have taken over.
Yeah, yeah. Because I would have thought The Rock
huge
seems
name.
To be a huge brand
right,
among kids and everything
yeah.
else. Yeah. Okay, we'll take a quick break.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Welcome back. Our entertainment paneler here, Nadine O'Regan and Owen Sweeney. Now, guys, there's a few notable music-y things coming on stream this weekend. So, Owen, why don't we start with Summer of Soul, which is on Disney Plus, and this is... Nadine, will you kick us off on that? This is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's out now and on Disney Plus, and it's such an amazing story. In the summer of 1969, just 100 miles south of Woodstock, the Harlem Cultural Festival took place over 6 weeks, and it featured artists, including the likes of Stevie Wonder, Nina Simone, Sly and the Family Stone, Gladys Knight and the Pips, B.B. King, and so many more. And this festival was huge, and it was all filmed, but the footage was kept in a basement for 50 years until the musician Questlove of The Roots picked it up and decided to make it into his first feature documentary, and included along with the footage from those concerts are interviews, contemporary interviews with the musicians themselves. So you've got like Stevie Wonder, Mavis Staples looking back at her early performance where she was asked to share the stage with Mahalia Jackson, and the thrill that she felt as a young musician being asked to step up. And when you look back, it is so incredible to watch these performances and see these musicians given their all and how thrilled and kind of humbled they were to perform at this festival before their own community. Yeah. It is an absolute astonishing thing that moment, it's been hidden for so long.
Yeah, but the story, moment that is happening there as well, which is the kind of the beginning of I suppose that rise in black consciousness as well, isn't it? And you can see
the
someone like
changing
Stevie
as well.
Wonder, yeah, who is just at the cusp, isn't he, of from turning from being little Stevie Wonder
from Mr. Motown into
his own. Yeah, and of course Barry Gordy didn't want them to become political at all. Him
not
and Marvin
at all. So
Gaye,
David Ruffin is there still in kind of a suit. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's that change from suit to kind of, you know, the 1970s fashion where collars widened and leg trousers or flares, you know, all that sort of that sense of style and the hairstyles, the afro came in as well, and the Black Panthers are there. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's both very nostalgic and in a way quite sad to think that musicians of that caliber were kind of ignored, that this didn't find an audience before now.
Yeah.
And I suppose it makes you think back to, you know, the way we talk about Woodstock, which took place at the same time, and the way it's kind of been in the public consciousness for decades as this seismic event. And here you have some of the greatest musicians of our time with this phenomenal set of gigs that only now we're seeing on the screen.
Yeah. What makes it great, though, actually watching it now, is the fact that, you know, they were lying in a basement until the tapes were rediscovered and passed on through however many hands until they ended up with Questlove. Is that you're looking at it now through 2021 eyes as well, so it's polished up, it sounds amazing, it looks fantastic. Yeah. Whereas if you go back and look at Woodstock, which is what, 69, 70, the film came out, it was done with a very 1970 sensibility.
Yes. But even
and it's a hard watch now, do you know?
Even the small details, like they talk about how difficult it was to get financing and how difficult it was to get a sponsor to basically get the money to have the lighting, the equipment, the contracts, to have the musicians sign
that's
up.
That's right, the stage was facing the sun.
The stage had to face west because that was the only way that the light would be good enough for the filmmakers because they couldn't afford the equipment.
At the height of summer as well.
Maxwell House came in as the sponsor. And then that extraordinary kind of local guy who was basically a kind of a lounge singer, who pulled it all together basically lying to everyone that, so you know, the usual
that's
thing.
That's how Gelda got Live Aid off the ground,
then,
of course.
It's fantastic. Unlike Nadine, I would say, Watch the Sound with Mark Ronson, which, like, after 10 minutes of it, I don't like Mark Ronson anymore. And I'd watch anything musicy, really, but...
Skip the first one. Okay, episode, because it's about autotune. And for some reason, everyone seems to have decided that now is the time to talk about autotune.
Because that pop one that you recommended
on Netflix does exactly the same.
Which does it much better, I would have said.
It's exactly the same programme on autotune. So what I would say is, if you're watching the Mark Ronson 6-part documentary series on Apple Plus, maybe skip the first one and go straight to the second episode, which is on sampling. And that episode is fascinating. And, you know, he's bringing in artists like the Beastie Boys and Public Enemy to talk about how they reached back through the archives, flipping through the records in the local record shops to find sounds that had been lost and then bringing them in to their records, and how they would literally play the record in the studio, push the faders up and down. And Paul McCartney's actually in there as well, talking about doing similar. And that episode is fascinating. The episode after that, which is about reverb, is also, I mean, yes, you need to be a music nerd, but it is also fascinating.
Okay.
And some of the interviewees.
The episode about reverb.
No, it's amazing. No,
hang on a minute. Mark Ronson has got a career out of reverb. Yeah, so the least he could do is an episode on it, let's face it. Mark Ronson the
will
same
you give it
again.
Another chance?
Okay, I will, but I'm not giving Mark Ronson another chance. I thought he'd be quite a cool guy, but he's not. It was very disappointing. These guys are best staying in the studio as
in
kind
the
of, you know, mythical figures there, I think. There's a couple of good documentaries coming up on RTE, which I want to mention. Owen, the 8th on RTE 1 on Wednesday, 9:35.
That's right. Just a quick disclaimer. I had a small hand in this. I was archive consultant on this. It is one of those documentaries that got lost, I suppose, in the pandemic and in terms of film festival viewings and all that sort of stuff. So it's on RTE on Wednesday. It is, no surprise if you're guessing, about the referendum on repealing the 8th Amendment and the road to, I suppose, it's made for an international audience. It is directed by... co-directed by three Irish women, Aideen Kane and Lucy Kennedy, both based in the United States, and Maeve O'Boyle, ably edited by Jordan Montminy, I must mention. And it brings you back to that time. Alva Smith ends up taking, I suppose, central role given the way the campaign went and how the result transpired. But very worth a watch, I shall say, even if I'm slightly compromised in saying that.
Okay, and Nadine, I'm fascinated by this because I keep seeing the trailers and I've never heard of Roger Doyle. Who is apparently an Irish electronica kind of pioneer, yeah?
Yeah, extremely left field. And The Curious Works of Roger Doyle is going to be on RTE 1 on Tuesday at 11 p.m. And it focuses on his journey over decades as he both tries to have a career in a very, very obscure area of electronica to begin with, but then also tries to bring an electronic opera to fruition. And that project takes him 10 years. And it's obviously a passion, or was a passion project for him. And this documentary is also a passion project, which has been created by the director, Brian Lally, and essentially follows him over that journey. There are contributors, the likes of Alban Ferrari and Selena Cartmel, the theatre director, is also there as well, of The Gate. And it's just one of those documentaries, I guess, that, again, yes, you need to be a music nerd, but isn't it interesting to think that, you know, back through Irish history, we have our own champions of left field electronica music.
Yeah,
and it's
absolutely
great to rediscover that as
and
well.
And like, look, a bit of glorious madness as well, like a guy with a grand mad project.
Absolutely, but sometimes brilliant. I think we spend a lot of time sort of enthusing about works that come across to us from the States, and we don't maybe think enough about the composers and musicians who are rooted in Ireland doing really interesting work. So this documentary looks at that.
Okay, that's The Curious Works of Roger Doyle, RT1 Tuesday.
Can I mention one other music thing
really
very quickly?
Yeah,
Fla Fest 21, 70 years of the Fla. It would have been happening in Mullingar this year, but TG Cahir are taking the ball and running with it. And Friday, Saturday, Sunday coming, 9:30 on TG Cahir.
Okay, so that's our summer of soul. There you
go. Exactly
right. Okay, thanks a million, Owen Sweeney and Nadine O'Regan. That's all we've time for today.